You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that is always up to speed with the latest Formula One news and results. And boy, wow, am I exhausted. I haven't watched a race and trying to frantically take notes without being able to finish taking notes, and I have to start writing a new sentence because something else happened. Mark, this was the craziest Grand Prix I've seen in maybe 3 years.
Yeah, Kevin, I mean, it was eventful right from the very first lap, and it was eventful right down to the very last lap. I mean, if you look at it, it might look a little bit strange to see the final race classification. And if you look at it years from now, say, oh, that race finished under a safety car. It couldn't have been very exciting, but it was anything but. We had people trading paint. We had people overtaking. We had everything happening, and it certainly was a tale of highs and lows and joy and tears for a number of drivers, and certainly the final classification certainly was not what anybody expected.
No, it wasn't, and even after turn one, I was really disappointed at who knew that the Leclerc would finish actually third while being third after the first lap too. Well, let's start with the beginning.
Yes.
Charles Leclerc got the pole in an amazing fashion, literally dominating the entire weekend so far in Bahrain, getting the best laps in FP1, FP2, qualifying, pole position, heading into the race with a level of maturity that I haven't seen for a young 21-year-old like him in a long time. Second youngest pole ever behind Sebastian Vettel, and the youngest Ferrari driver to ever get a pole position. A lot of firsts this weekend. He is actually, too, there's more stats, but the youngest Ferrari driver to ever get a pole position. First of all, Mark, yesterday I did a little recap, but I was by myself. What did you think about Leclerc's pole position after yesterday's qualifying?
Oh, I thought it was extremely impressive. I mean, not only did he get the pole, but I mean, look at the guys that he beat to take the pole position. I mean, he was in front of his teammate, Sebastian Vettel. I mean, Charles, his Q3 time to take the pole was a 1:27.866. Sebastian's time was a 1:28.160, and he was only 0.03 of a second in front of Lewis Hamilton. And even Valtteri Bottas wasn't really all that far. I mean, Vettel, Hamilton, and Bottas are all within about 0.1 of a second. So very, very tight. So, I mean, to come out and beat guys like that to start your first race on pole position is very, very impressive. But, Kevin, you know, when we go to fast forward now to what we just saw at the race itself today, it was certainly, well, I mean, he did have, I think, the disadvantage of maybe being on the dirtier side of the track, because it certainly seemed like Sebastian had more grip getting off the line there and into turn one. And it certainly seemed that until his tires cleaned up and he got more heat into them, he was really struggling to stay ahead. And well, I was kind of wondering at one point, well, he's dropped from P1 to P3 on the first lap. Is he going to get swallowed up by Bottas? And I thought, well, if he gets swallowed up and passed by Bottas, then you have Max Verstappen, who's nipping at the tails. And we all know that Max is good for a pass or an attempt on one at any time. But all credit to him. He managed to keep his cool and get the car going, get some heat into those tires. And very soon he got his race back on track, literally and figuratively. And pretty soon he was right back up at the top, and that's where he stayed for basically the entire race.
The moment that really impressed me is when he overtook Sebastian Vettel outright on the track. Same car, different talent, and I guess Charles Leclerc is the most talented one. We saw a lot of his talent during the weekend and his maturity level, and just like a spoiler alert, he had a technical difficulty late in the race, lap 47. The H recovery unit stopped working, which means the turbo didn't get any power, because the H recovery unit is what gathers harvest energy, to use the best term, with the braking power. So whenever you see that red light blinking in the back of the car, this is the H recovery unit harvesting energy to be able to power the turbo, which gives you between 25 to 50 kph more, which was the amount he was missing from that point on. And he got lucky to finish even on the podium if it wasn't for the two Renaults stopped working at the same time. But Charles Leclerc finished third. He should have won this race. He has the fastest lap, so he gets a podium. He gets a point for the fastest lap. But I think we can be honest by saying he won all our hearts, and he has become a worldwide phenomenon, and the entire paddock was cheering when he talked. Lewis Hamilton, Valtteri Bottas were clapping when he entered the room post-race, you know, the cool-off room just before the podium ceremony, and everyone else clapped. I haven't seen this in forever. I haven't seen this ever, I think. And a star is born, Mark. Charles Leclerc, the new darling of Formula One.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to see a guy, a five-time world champion like Lewis Hamilton applauding a guy like Charles Leclerc is, you know, that says a lot, just the respect that that the other drivers have for him. And you made a number of good points in what you were just saying just now, Kevin. I mean, the overtake that he made, not just on Lewis Hamilton, but on his teammate Sebastian Vettel, just outright, you know, there was no overcut, no undercut. It was just straight wheel-to-wheel racing on the track. I mean, just phenomenal stuff, and just what he was able to do in a car that was equal to Sebastian Vettel's. I mean, there was no indication during the race that Sebastian was unhappy with anything in his car, no indication from either himself or the pit wall that there was any problem with his car. So we have to assume it was equal equipment, and it was just almost, I guess, a little glimpse in the race today at Ferrari, what we saw last year at what was then Sauber Alfa Romeo Racing between Charles Leclerc and his then teammate Marcus Ericsson, week in, week out, that with equal equipment, in which was obviously not one of the best cars on the grid last year, or not one of the top cars, I should say that, but he was constantly and consistently able to outperform his teammate Marcus Ericsson last year, and we've seen that this year as well. I mean, obviously, 2 weeks ago in Australia, there were team orders that came into effect, and Charles obviously came home in P5 that race. But had they been allowed to race, and had they not instituted the team orders there from the pit wall, obviously I think that Charles would have taken P4. Probably a little bit of a stretch to imagine he would have kind of caught up and passed Max Verstappen at Melbourne, but certainly the guy is quick, and I think that, like you say, a star is born. He won over a lot of fans, and especially with the performance that we saw on the track all weekend long in practice and qualifying in the Grand Prix itself, and then the disappointments, but then just the class that he handled it. And, well, you know, it is disappointing for him, but on the flip side, there is a silver lining to that cloud, because even though he lost the race, he did get his first podium, and of course he was benefiting to a certain extent of the safety car period right at the very end of the race, and that was just what he needed. Had they taken that safety car away a couple of laps earlier, had it worked out that way, then he would have just been a sitting duck.
Yeah, he would have finished like outside of the top 10 probably. That would have been a shame. But you mentioned the clean racing in this race between Leclerc and Vettel. There was racing. This was an actual race. If you look at the times, all the way to Tony Gio at the 11th spot, everyone's in the same lap. Last week, it was six cars in the same lap. Well, last Grand Prix was six cars in the same lap. We've seen clean racing. Okay, some wasn't that clean with the Verstappen and Sainz incident in the first lap, which derailed Carlos Sainz's entire race. He had to do four pit stops, and eventually in the penultimate lap of the race, he had to retire. But we've seen clean racing. Like, I've seen Bottas and Hamilton race together. Bottas leaving just enough space for Hamilton, but not too much. Both of them racing against each other. Very clean. Same thing between Hamilton and Vettel. They were racing for second position. Hamilton overtook him. And then Vettel was trying to claw back at lap 38 and eventually spun around. But there was no contacts. It was really clean. I don't know if there was a memo, like a driver memo, or if someone talked to all the drivers, but this was a clean race. We've seen more overtaking in this race than I can remember, for sure. And Bahrain is not the easiest track to overtake, but with the DRS, with the three DRS zones, and for some reason, a driver memo that people say, okay, we're going to leave each other's space this year. And maybe it's a derivative of the fact that, you know, you can overtake a bit more than last year. So maybe getting overtaken is not as definitive as last year, where if you get overtake, well, it's done. You're going to finish behind it because there's no way the cars can overtake. This year, it's a bit different. So maybe you don't defend or you don't block the opponent, the car behind you, as much because you know that the next lap, you'll be in the DRS zone and you'll have the advantage. So maybe that's the idea, but the drivers are giving each other a bit more space and they're racing clean and it makes for great racing.
Yeah, Kevin, you know, I think you almost stole the words right out of my mouth. And like you were saying, that the way that the cars are designed this year, what with the simpler front wings and the changes that they've made to the brake ducts and the barge boards, just making it more possible for the cars to get closer. And thereby, if the cars are closer, then the theory is that you're able to overtake. And I think that now that there are more opportunities to overtake, that in the past, that when you get a car in a position that where he was trying to overtake somebody in front of him, sometimes I think a lot of the contact was due to the fact that there just weren't many of those opportunities, that we saw almost more overtaking in desperation, if you will. And I think from there, that's when you'd see those moments of contact. And I think that today we saw a good example of the cars being able to follow each other closer, the opportunities to pass more, and then just the drivers giving each other that respect, that because, you know, they know that there's going to be opportunities to get past or overtake the cars in front of them, that, okay, well, I lost a position now, but I've got a car and we're in a series now where these opportunities are there to present itself, that being overtaken now is not necessarily your day is over and done and you're just going to be waiting to get swallowed up and passed by the car or the next fastest car behind you. That we saw guys going up and down and passing all over, and I was really relishing to see some of these battles between the top runners. I mean, we saw quite a bit of passing in action between Ferrari and Mercedes this afternoon, or this morning I should say, and we saw plenty of action all the way up and down through the racing order, right from green flights to checkered flag, and that makes it great. Of course, there were some incidents, like you said, there was Verstappen and Carlos Sainz. I mean, that was reviewed by the stewards, and ultimately they decided it was a racing incident. I mean, it was unfortunate for Carlos, don't get me wrong. I mean, ultimately he decided to retire the car towards the end of the race, but it was a racing incident. I thought that it was interesting too, later in the race, the incident between Antonio Giovinazzi and the torpedo Kvyat that resulted in a penalty for Kvyat, just the way that he closed the door when Giovinazzi was obviously on the inside line and making that move. That was fair enough, but you know what? So that's racing, and I mean, these things are going to happen. I mean, it was a bit of a silly move by Kvyat, but ultimately he's the one that paid the price double for that because he spun out and then had got the penalty on top of it. But then we even saw the teammates in Ricardo and Nico Hülkenberg touching at the end of the straightaway into turn one, and I love the the race radio from Nico Hülkenberg. What? Did he just touch me? Or did he just hit me? So, you know, it's good to see. I mean, I don't mind these little incidents. I mean, it's going to happen from time to time. As long as guys are respectful and it's not dangerous and it's not reckless, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Let's talk about Renault, Mark. What happened there? Lap 55. I thought they hit each other. When I first saw both Renault, like, off, like, two corners difference. One's in the gravel, one's in the escape area, and you look at the cars, there's no damage whatsoever. You don't hear anything. You're wondering, did they run out of fuel? What did they do? And then you have the replay, and you see Hülkenberg's engine just dying, just exploding at the end of that turn, and he just continues, like, okay, I'm done. And almost, like, I don't know if it's serendipity or what is it, but at the exact same time, Ricardo's car just loses every electric power it has. So, I don't know. I don't know what happened there. It doesn't look good for Renault. They do have reliability issues. We can be sure of that now. But not only this, they are lacking pace with the qualifying yesterday, with the result in the race here. Both Renault outside of the points, and mix this with the fact that McLaren, the fact that Haas, and as well, let me just, where is it in my, so I have it in my here. So the three mid-team, McLaren, Haas, and Renault, slowly they're getting a bit better. But Renault, with the reliability issues, they're still going to have to battle like Racing Point in the hierarchy, which they should be a lot higher than that. Renault should be battling for fourth, but reliability is their biggest downfall, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but when I saw the replay, when because, I mean, first of all, I noticed that it was a Ricardo that was parked on the side of the track. And I'm like, well, what's happened to Hülkenberg? Was that Hülkenberg? I was a little bit confused as to which Renault was actually off the track and retired. And then I realized it was both of them. But then when we saw the replays of what was happening, well, I mean, Ricardo's is a bit of a mystery at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see in the postmortem of this Grand Prix in the next couple of days what actually comes out, what the official reason for his retirement is. But Hülkenberg, the engine letting go like that, you know, maybe not too much of a surprise. I mean, you look at when he was running in his highest position during the race, he was 11 spots ahead of where he qualified, and he was really racing hard. And even after Vettel had his moments and had to go into the pits to replace the tires and the front wing, he came out past Ricardo, past Hülkenberg, and Hülkenberg, you know, he stuck with him. I mean, he wasn't right on his rear wing, but he was within about 4 seconds of Vettel. I mean, Vettel maybe wasn't pushing it, realizing that he was not going to catch Max Verstappen by the end of the race, and just did not want to put more wear and tear on the equipment than necessary. So there's that to consider. But I mean, 4.5 seconds kind of holding there is not really all that it was small of a gap that I would have anticipated. I would have thought that I would have expected Vettel to disappear down the track. So maybe Nico Hülkenberg had the boost turned up a little bit more. Maybe he was pushing it. I mean, that will be remain to be seen. But certainly a double DNF does not look good for them. I mean, especially when you see that that Max Verstappen again with the Red Bull with the Honda in it now. Of course, you know, the Red Bull partnership with them is long over. Is in P4. You know, getting points again, and even Pierre Gasly was well beneficiary of some good luck there and managed to get a P8. You know, I think that so much maybe flatters his afternoon a little bit, but certainly it doesn't look good. But then you even compare the Renaults. I mean, you look at Lando Norris coming home in P6. Carlos Sainz certainly looked pretty pacey off of the off of the start, and I even remarked, I think if you go and look through our Twitter feed, that I made a remark even. I think it was just before where they touched and Sainz went off. But certainly, I mean, would we have said 1 year ago, would we even said 2 weeks ago, that we would have expected to see a McLaren and a Red Bull dicing for position, even on the first lap? I'm sure that's a hard no for everyone. But certainly, I mean, they had a very good qualifying. I mean, both of the McLarens were qualified in the top 10, Sainz in 7th and Norris in P10. And then you got to go a ways back to find the two, Renault cars. So certainly a very disappointing for them. But, you know, that's Formula One. And, you know, right now, at least in the moral battle, I think that that Red Bull is taking the higher ground. I guess they're feeling pretty justified in their decision to switch. But certainly they've got some big work to do there. And I was a little bit mistaken there. I mean, Lando qualified in P10. Danny Ricciardo qualified in P11. It was Hülkenberg that didn't make it out of Q1 and qualified in P17. Yep. So certainly they got some big issues there. I mean, they weren't exactly, you know, didn't have the greatest race in Australia a couple of weeks ago either. So things are not going good, despite all the big boasts and claims that they made at the start of the season.
And to be fair, you're right. They were 6th and 7th at one point during the race today. And I did write on my notes that it looks like Haas, McLaren, and Renault really got their act together. Renault, unfortunately, as we say, that tweet didn't age well. So by the end of the race, my note did not age well because Renault both DNF. But look at the midfield battle for a second, and we'll get to Red Bull. I want to dedicate like a few minutes to Red Bull itself because I think it's worth it. Pierre Gasly's sure. not cutting it right now, and we'll talk about this. Yeah. But the midfield battle, Haas, McLaren, Renault, and Racing Point are the four teams battling for fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh spot in the Constructors' Championship. And that race is going to be fascinating. It's unfortunate for Grosjean that he had to change some parts, had a five-grid spot penalty for the beginning of the race today. And it's a shame, too, that K-Mag had not necessarily the best race today. But we do feel, actually I do feel, that they deserved better, Haas, and they were really quick in qualifying. And I think the midfield battle of Haas, McLaren, and Renault is going to be fascinating because all those three teams, okay, Renault might need reliability, but McLaren has surprisingly been reliable. The science trouble today had nothing to do with reliability of the car. Nope. The car seems to be a lot more easy to drive. And for Lando Norris to do two great performances in his first two Grand Prix is impressive. Between Vettel and Raikkonen, like finished sixth between a former world champion and the biggest veteran in the field as Kimi Raikkonen, McLaren has surprised me. Haas is surprising me. And both teams, okay, Haas surprising me even more because they're doing a lot with not that much. And they're not producing the parts themselves. They're literally like a company that buys a lot of things from their suppliers. They build the final product and they race with it. And I'm surprised. Haas might be onto something. And if you just figure out the race pace a bit and luck, considering Grosjean, Haas could be the fourth best team, and you know, this could be to the detriment of a Racing Point, which seems to be going backwards right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk a little bit more about that in the midfield battle as we pause briefly here for network identification and a word from our sponsor.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, Kevin. Well, yeah, a number of things to talk about that we left off on just before the break there. And certainly, yeah, the comments that you were making about Haas, certainly very a disappointing afternoon for them. Again, they had a pretty decent time of it in qualifying. They were competitive, at least. I mean, unfortunately, of course, Romain Grosjean had the penalty applied to them. But they were looking good. They looked good in Australia a couple of weeks ago, but unfortunately the race pace wasn't there today. Grosjean, of course, had the first corner coming together with Lance Stroll, which kind of ruined his race, and he didn't actually finish after it was all said and done. Kevin Magnussen, he qualified in P6, but in the actual race itself, the pace just wasn't there. He just was not competitive and finished well out of the points in P13. But then again, the racing point, like you say, they look like they're going backwards. But then again, you have Sergio Perez. Again, his afternoon may be flattered a little bit by the untimely retirement of, or the double DNF of the Renaults right at the end there. Because I mean, he sneaks in to get a point right at the very end in P10, and Lance Stroll well off of the pace. Who knows what he was dealing with throughout the race. Obviously, he had that first corner coming together with Grosjean. Who knows if he was carrying a problem, but again, he had issues all weekend long. I mean, he had a pretty good opening race in Australia a couple of weeks ago. I think he surprised a lot of people finishing where he did inside of the top 10. But then this weekend, you know, he doesn't get out of Q1 in the race. He's nowhere. He gets lapped. So, you know, it doesn't really help, you know, his supporters and his boosters to, you know, have a weekend like he did. And definitely not his finest moments. But, you know, it's interesting. Again, you look at the Williams. I mean, I know anything that we can kind of say at this point is a little bit redundant, because we've just talked about how bad they are going back even, you know, 2 months ago now, or 6 weeks ago, back to winter testing. But I mean, you look now again, they're the final two cars in the racing order. They are classified 15th and 16th. George Russell was down one lap. Kubica was he was lapped twice by the time it was all said and done.
Yeah.
So obviously the issues they have there are, well, who knows if they're terminal. They're terminal for this season, and who knows if Patrick Head will be able to turn it around based on whatever his input is going to be on his somewhat limited consultancy role within his return to Williams.
Yeah, that's a, you know what did I talk about last week, last show, Mark? 2 weeks ago. I mentioned Patrick Head by name. I literally said, Williams should go back in their history and get people that knew what they were doing. Patrick Head was hired as a consultant. And it's funny too, because at the same time, Jacques Clear is the one like working at a really high level for Ferrari. So those are all coming from Williams. But you're right. And Russell is doing the best he can. But this is going to seem really terrible, what I'm going to say. And no offense to the driver I'm going to talk about next. I'm not saying you're trash, my friend. Not at all. You're a really good driver. Your story is amazing. And it's a feel-good story. But he's just not quick enough. Is it the injuries? Is it Robert Kubica? It's not cutting it in Formula One. Two laps down, and the only driver two laps down, and not just two laps, like a whole lot of second between him and his teammates, which means that it's not the car. His second lap down is more his performance, his pace. And he's not quick enough. He's not good enough. And I guess we have our answer. I guess we understand why Williams was reluctant putting him in the seat last year. And it took basically a lack of other options for them this year, and the lack of willingness to pay more drivers a lot more money and to pay him a salary when he's not driving. Yeah, the Robert Kubica experiment at Williams is failing. It's failing badly. And it's becoming an embarrassment for Williams. And I don't know how long before they actually make a move and get a new driver in that car. I wouldn't be surprised. But so far, after two Grand Prix, it's a terrible, terrible result for Williams.
Well, you know, it was funny too, because when the drivers were kind of being all moved around last year, and drivers were being confirmed for whatever team and here and there, it was interesting, because after George Russell was confirmed to be going to Williams for 2019, and that second seat was kind of, it was open for a while, and there was a lot of talk. Well, you know, it really kind of hinges on, you know, what's Lance Stroll going to do? I mean, it was an obvious open secret that he was going to go to Racing Point. I mean, when your dad leads the consortium that buys the team, you know, it's everybody's new, let's just put it that way, that's where he was going to end up. And of course, that's exactly what happened. But of course, the other thing that when everybody was really wondering about is, well, if Lance is going to Racing Point, what's going to happen to Esteban Ocon? Because I mean, he's had a season in a bit in Formula One, and I think for a young guy, he's done very well. He did, you know, I mean, obviously it's Racing Point, Force India, whatever you want want to call it. So there are going to be, you know, they're not going to be challenging for race victories, but he did very well. I mean, he obviously had some hard moments with Sergio Perez, and they had their time here and there. But I think that Ocon obviously acquitted himself very well in the time that he was in Formula One. And he was one of the names that was thrown out there to possibly be that second to Williams driver for this year. Of course, it doesn't work out that way. And Esteban ends up as reserve driver for, for Mercedes. And I think that if you are Esteban Ocon, you're sitting there right now thinking, you know what? I think I'm in a pretty good place. I might not be out there racing right now, but at least I'm not racing in a Williams.
At least I'm not actually damaging my reputation by racing in a bad car. Just ask Pascal Wehrlein how racing with a bad car can affect your reputation. He's not in F1 anymore. He's in Formula E, right? The 2 years at Sauber did a tremendous job of ruining the reputation of a Pascal Wehrlein, which is literally Esteban Ocon 3 years ago is Pascal Wehrlein. So,
Yeah, no, you're right. There's a lot of parallels to be made between the two of them. And certainly, you know, Wehrlein was, he was even the reserve driver at Mercedes a couple of years ago when it was Hamilton and Rosberg. So, you know, you kind of fast forward now to the next generation of drivers. And yeah, you have Ocon kind of sitting on the sidelines, and Wehrlein, he's not even mentioned in Formula One anymore. So, you know, who knows? It seems doubtful, you know, the way that that Formula One is. It's either you're hot or you're not. And when you're not hot, you're just gone from Formula One, unless your name is Danny Kvyat and you just happen to be the benefactor of good fortune that somehow a team and a system like Red Bull just does not have enough drivers with enough points to earn their super license, and he gets his way back into to Formula One. But you know, I just want to, you know, talking about Red Bull right now, I just want to talk a little bit now about those two the two cars there. Verstappen finishing, I think, whereabouts we would expect. And obviously a bit of a quiet race for Max, apart from that early coming together with Carlos Sainz. But just based on the pace that we saw this weekend, it was Ferrari, then it was Mercedes, and then it was pretty much everyone else. So that's not really too much of a surprise. But, you know, the one thing that I am surprised about, and this is not really anything new, is just so far the difference between Pierre Gasly and Max Verstappen. Verstappen, we know what Max is all about. I mean, he's been doing it for several years now. I mean, he's got all the attributes to be, he's already a superstar in Formula One. I mean, he's all got all the attributes to be a race winner and a potential Formula One world champion. But I would have expected to see Gasly be a little bit closer. I don't know if I necessarily expect Gasly to be delivering the performances in 2019, at least right off of the bat that we saw in previous, where it would be Ricciardo and Verstappen or Verstappen and Ricciardo. I mean, they were pretty close and consistent in the way that those two finished races. But certainly, I mean, even looking at the race classification for today, I mean, he is in a P8. And like I say, I mean, he's flattered a little bit. So, I mean, at best, he's four places behind his teammate. At worst, he's five or six places behind his teammate. Do we expect more from Pierre Gasly in the Red Bull, or is it a little bit too early to push him for those results? Kevin, what do you think?
No, we should expect more. And he's not delivering. Why? Look at the counterparts. And I think it's twofold here. I think when you look at Charles Leclerc and you look at Max Verstappen 2 years ago, what he did when he went from Toro Rosso to Red Bull, and a Charles Leclerc to go from Alfa Romeo to Ferrari, and a Pierre Gasly to go from Toro Rosso to Red Bull, are all very similar situation where it's very young drivers getting a seat in a top team in Formula One. So for that basis of comparison, you can look at their results after just a couple races. Max won his first race, but it was mid-season. He was transferring to a team that had the knowledge of the car that is way ahead of now. It was Barcelona, which is mid-season. So that is different. But we can look at Charles Leclerc after two Grand Prix and Pierre Gasly after two Grand Prix. They should be in a similar position. And it's P8, but it's not a real P8. It's actually a P10 that got a lot of luck when the two Renaults went kaput. So for me, is a P10. And P10, when you started P13th, in a track where you have three DRS zones and you're supposed to have a good car, thing shows that I think it puts in perspective how great a work Charles Leclerc is doing and how great Max Verstappen was in its transfer. And I think it just shows us that it's not that easy. And Pierre Gasly might be a talented driver, but there's still a big step from Toro Rosso to Red Bull. And I think it shows us, too, that, yes, Honda might be fast. The Honda engine might be great, better than we thought. And that relationship might be going well. But there's a big gap this year so far between Ferrari, Mercedes, and Red Bull. And then there's another gap in the rest of the field. But I think the gap between the rest of this field is smaller. I think they're closer to fourth than there is to than they are to second in the Constructors' Championship. And that is because of Pierre Gasly. He has to find a way to be closer to his teammate because it's not looking good on him so far. We are not expecting too much out of him. If you're good enough, you're old enough. Age is not a factor at that level of competitive sports. So Pierre Gasly should do better and should be able to rival his teammates. And so far, he's like a second behind every lap. It's just not good enough, Mark.
Yeah, you know, I was just kind of looking at the Constructors' Championship as you were talking there, Kevin. And right now, we have Mercedes after two races on top with 44 points. Ferrari in second place in the championship with 22 points. And Red Bull with 15 points. So, you know, obviously, it is very, very early in the season to really draw too many conclusions from that. But certainly, based on the first two races of the season, it's exactly like you say, we need to see more from Pierre Gasly, and I'm sure that the team is going to instill that message upon him too, because you know winter testing didn't really go all that smoothly for him either. I mean, they did lose some time in the second test because he had an accident, and they kind of had to piece the cars together, so that kind of limited the running that they had. And I know that you're setting the bar kind of high when you have a teammate in Max Verstappen, but I think just based on what we've seen through the first couple of races, I think it really goes to show of how close and how maybe a little bit more evenly matched Max and Ricardo were as teammates. I think obviously you got to give the edge to Max Verstappen, but I think that Ricardo obviously on his on his day was good for winning a race or two here and there, and we've seen him prove that over the past several years, and he's always good for a podium. And certainly, like I was saying just a few minutes ago, when it was always one or the other in front of each other, so the results were very, very consistent. And you know, if you even go back like a year ago into the Constructors' Championship, you had Mercedes way out in front with 655 points, Ferrari with 571 points, and Red Bull with 419 points. I know there's several hundred points added on to that, of course, because that's the final standings at end of 2018. But there's a similar gap if you look at 44, 22, and 15 compared to 65, 571 and 419. Proportionally, they're about the same. So if things keep continuing to go as they have for the first two races through the next 19 races to Abu Dhabi and the end of November, it's very possible that's exactly how it could play out. And of course, in a couple of weeks, we're going to Shanghai. We're going to China for the 1,000th Grand Prix.
Oh, yeah.
And Kevin, it really makes you wonder, what is going to happen in Shanghai? Is it going to be another Mercedes 1-2? Is it going to be Ferrari finally getting it right? Because that was the big question, was they are fast, but are they reliable? And today they prove they are not reliable. And I would still like to hear what, Vettel's side of the story is in the incident that he had. Was it the tires? Was it him just pushing it too much, carrying too much speed through that corner, trying to stick with Hamilton and then just losing it on the apex? I don't know. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt until I hear otherwise, but it kind of looked like a guy pushing it too much, right?
Yeah, but we did hear about Hamilton, about that moment. And Hamilton said, I knew he was going to come inside, so I stayed on the outside and I waited until the last possible moment to break. Which means Vettel waited till the last possible moment to break too, just following the car in front of him and trying to figure out if that space was there or not. And the space was there, but I think we know Vettel. Like, did Vettel own up to any of his mistakes last year? No. Throws the team, strategy, anything else under the bus. And it doesn't matter if it's his fault or not. So we're not going to hear if it's actually his fault or not. But he was pushing. And, you know, you're pushing. It's a racing. And Formula One has been sterile for a bit now. That we forget that that's normal. Like, look at any other racing leagues or the formulas and prototypes, or if you look at Daytona, like NASCAR, IndyCar, look at what happens in endurance racing, Le Mans and Rolex and Daytona and all those races. When you race with someone else and they have a fast car and you have a fast car, you want to keep up with them. Sometimes you can't, and sometimes the back of your car just slips away from you. Just goes away from you because you're pushing the car to its limits. And I want to see that. That's what I want to see. Formula One cars, drivers trying to get to the other car, not just being conservative and sterile and not wanting to risk it. To win, you have to risk it, especially if we're going to have a season where there's six pretender for the championship and there's more than one team pretending for like going for the wins. They're going to have to battle each other on the track, and you want to see that. So it is Vettel's fault, but it is dictated by the great pressure that Hamilton did put on Vettel by waiting at the end of that apex to break turn, to leave just enough space, but the car, because you're waiting so long before you actually turn, you're past the apex, your balance of their car is not made for that, and then the end, just you just turn around. And that's what I want to see, though. It's racing, and it was great to see. I felt vindicated. I'm like, yes, that's what I want to see. Yes, that's a race. That's how you drive. That's how you drive for a second spot in the race.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, that's one of the, I guess, one of my complaints or one of the issues I've had over the past couple of years, that it's either been Ferrari or Mercedes. You know, one car was always better suited to another track. So it was either one of the Mercedes racing off to the distance or one of the Ferraris. And rarely did we see them racing head to head. So to see them racing head to head over the past couple of races this year, I think it's great. And, you know, if, you know, like you were just saying, Sebastian probably overcooked it, carried too much speed into that corner, and then just was not able to keep the rear end of the car on the track when you're coming out of the at the exit of that turn, and just loses it. Hey, that's racing. But you know what? They were racing, and that's what we want to see. And I think that's what's exciting. And of course, I mean, even though it didn't end well for Sebastian Vettel today compared to Lewis Hamilton, there still are 19 races left. And that's the great thing. Anything can happen. I mean, it's proven to be unpredictable. I mean, 2 weeks ago, sure, it was a Mercedes 1-2 on the on that race as well. But did we really expect to see Valtteri Bottas come out and really dominate that the way that he did? I mean, I know that Lewis had some issues with his car, with the floor on his car, but was he really... was the issue with the floor, the damage they had, that much of a detriment that he was that far behind Bottas? I mean, we talked about it, I think, twice now in previous shows. But then you fast forward to this week, and then you just see how dominant that the Ferrari, how much speed that they had, and then you just see all the things that unfold during the race. So I think that if this can continue, if Red Bull can kind of find a way to get Max a little bit more into the mix, who knows? You know, they were very good in China last year. Of course, there was a bit of a benefit there because there was the accident between Sebastian Vettel and then Max Verstappen, and then Red Bull, of course, did their typical smart and opportunistic pit stops to double stack their cars or really get Ricciardo in there, and it played out well for them. So they can win there. Whether they can win there this year in a straight up fight between themselves and Ferrari and Mercedes remains to be seen, but it can happen.
It can happen. And before we just continue, we'll take a very short break still for our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to Scuderia F1 Podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One. I'm Kevin Laramie with Mark Daly, as always. And Mark, before we turn our attention to China and Shanghai in 2 weeks' time, in a fortnight's time, the race number 1000 in the history of Formula One. We'll just wrap up race number 999, the Bahrain Grand Prix in 2019. Mark, it was the 8th Grand Prix to ever finish under a safety car, the first since China in 2015. So that just shows you too, the lack of safety car means because the lack of battle. If you have battles on the track, there's things that are going to happen. Things are going to fly away. Mostly front wings are going to be flying away everywhere. But I think it's one of the fun things with the new design and the bigger front wing. And I think we've seen this with Hamilton and Leclerc when they were battling in the first lap too. Hamilton was really nice to Leclerc because as much as he didn't want to hurt him, he didn't want to hurt his car too. And at some point, Leclerc was not fast in the third corner. And Hamilton was behind him trying to find an opening. And you see Leclerc just trying to survive. And Hamilton just brakes a little to make sure that his front wing doesn't catch Leclerc's left back tire. But this shows you that the drivers are aware of the size of their front wings. They're aware that if they go too close, and even with the DRS, that's more effective, you have to get new marks because you have to brake a little before because actually you're coming in with a lot more speed than before. And if you're not careful, your front wing is gonna touch the other car. But the chaos of front wings braking in Formula One this year will give us a bit of a monkey in the wrench where we'll see cars out of position. And now with the new downforce, the new grip that the car seems to have, especially because of the downforce of the bigger front wing and back wing, but as well as the speed of DRS, we're going to see more overtaking. So that one decision to make the front wing and the back wing bigger mixed with this affecting the DRS. If you make the back wing bigger, it affects the speed the DRS gives you. So that single decision might be why we're seeing two more exciting races than before this year so far. And I think it bodes well, and the drivers are aware because they're reacting either conservatively or going for it. They don't want to be caught in the middle where if you're just going to touch the other car, your wings are going to break. So I think that decision might be the best decision Formula One has taken during the offseason.
The way that they just kind of pushed that one through, and then also just the way that the whole development of these new wings and the barge boards and the brake ducts, how it really has come and been implemented into the sport. I mean, there was a lot of complaints from the teams at the time and even over the course of the winter that that there were a lot of issues designing them, and just the amount of money. I think it was Red Bull said something to the effect of that they spent 15 million euros just to design the new front wings, and then just the way that all the changes and impacts that it had to the rest of the car. But it's the one thing that really fascinates me is that the way that, you know, the reason for the aero change was, of course, to make the closer racing and just to minimize that the disturbance of the dirty air behind the cars. But, you know, there was a lot of complaints about it, how it was going to slow it down, how it was going to reduce the downforce and all these things. So all these negative things that were discussed and put out there by the different teams, the different drivers, the different designers, the different engineers between last year and this year. And then to the fact that, you know, we've seen that basically all these issues that they were complaining about haven't really materialized. They've managed as usual, as is the ingenuity, as is the brilliance with the people that work in Formula One, that design these cars and all the pieces that go on them and inside of them, that they were able to take that challenge and it's working, and it's working great. So hopefully we see more races like we did in Bahrain this afternoon, and we see that the rest of the year. Certainly we've seen in China some moments over the years, and at Shanghai there are two very, very long straightaways, and I'm just looking at the circuit map right now. The way that they have it at least set up at the moment is for two DRS zones, but we've seen them add additional DRS zones. Who knows by the time we get to Shanghai in a couple of weeks whether or not they will add another a third one. But certainly some of these longer straightaways that they have at the start finish and then also at the back of the circuit can make for some very, very exciting opportunities for cars to overtake each other. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yep, a few things about the Shanghai Grand Prix. It'll be the 1,000th Grand Prix in the history of Formula One. Knowing American media, American Liberty media, and knowing how big round numbers are important for them because it catches people's attention, I imagine there's going to be a lot of festivities in China. I hope they bring drivers of the past. I hope they bring whatever they can. I hope we see old cars, vintage cars in the pre-race that we see around the track. I hope we hear more about some of the behind the scenes in the greatest moment of history of Formula One. I hope there's a lot of things, but I think I'm having hope, and I think it's going to come to me because, yeah, Liberty Media is actually really good at those things, and they've been hyping the 1,000th race all season long. They were mentioning, oh, race 998 in Australia, 999 in Bahrain. It's the road to 1,000. And that 1,000 will truly mark the end of an era and the beginning of Liberty Media for me owning and not being afraid of changing things. Right? When you buy a brand new company, you don't just come in and change everything the second week. You stay there for a year and a half. You assess a lot of different things. You slowly share your vision with your coworkers, with the people underneath you as a the guy from Liberty Media, I forget his last name for some reason, and Ross Brown. So when you're in that position, you wait a little bit and then you start changing. And I think Race 1000 will mark the mental barrier where Liberty Media feels that they're finally in control of Formula One and it's long gone from Bernie Ecclestone. So I think Race 1000 will show us what the future of Formula was while looking at the history, and will bring us a lot of interesting ideas. But I hope they announce in the next week, so we can talk about it in next week's show, Mark, what event and what special attraction Liberty Media will bring for the 1000th Grand Prix in the history of Formula One.
Absolutely. I've got a couple of points to add to that, Kevin, and we'll do so as we wrap up the final segment of the show here on the Overtime Media Network. After this very short break, you're listening to Scuderia F1 special post-race live stream. We'll be back in just a moment.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, Kevin, it's time to start wrapping this one up. A very eventful Bahrain Grand Prix, but we were just talking about the Chinese Grand Prix in Shanghai just before the break here. And it was interesting, too, when it came out that the 1,000th Grand Prix was going to be in China. There was some talk that they were going to try and maybe manipulate the schedule and maybe have it at Silverstone for the British Grand Prix. And honestly, I'm kind of glad that they just decided to have it wherever it fell in the schedule, and if it just happened to be China, then so be it. And certainly, like you were saying just now, I'm looking forward to seeing what sort of festivities and what sort of commemorations that they make around the special event, because they've been going now since 1950. And if you think about some of the iconic names, you've got Fangio, you have, we could just keep going. I mean, there's Fangio, you have Jim Clark, you have Michael Schumacher, you have Ayrton Senna, Alain Prost. Just keep going on and on and on. So many legendary names and teams like Mercedes, Ferraris, Maserati, and going on and on, just fewer teams.
Villeneuve, of course, I have to plug Villeneuve. Father and son.
Gilles Villeneuve.
Exactly. Father and son. But a lot of the James Hunt, the Hill duo of father and son, Graham and Damon. No, so a lot of history in Formula One. And next week, I hope we'll see one of the old cars. And I hope we'll see the six-wheel car go around the track once or twice. You know, just for old time's sakes. Because there's been some weird cars in the history of Formula One. There's cars that look more like spaceship that happened before. And, you know, I would kind of like to see them one more time in celebration of the 1,000th race. And I hope we see something like, what will F1 look in 1,000 races from now? will we have Formula One just like planes and just basically being in the air? Will flying cars exist? Will F1 be flying cars? Will it be all electric in a thousand races time? I think it's interesting to just have that thought experiment of what can Formula One look like in a thousand races time. Mark, quickly, off the top of your head, if you can use your ability to project yourself in the future, what would F1 look 50 years from now?
Wow, I'll have to pick up my dusty crystal ball here and give it a little bit of a polish, Kevin. But I think obviously that the future is going to be electric, and I don't think that it is going to be obviously the sole fiefdom, if you will, of Formula E. They've got their own, I think, identity, the own way that they kind of race, their own way that they market and their own design of the cars and things like that. And I've been watching a little bit more of Formula E this year. I'm still finding it a little bit to try and really snag my attention to the degree that Formula One is. I mean, it's an interesting, exciting series. There's some good racing in it, don't get me wrong. But the one thing that that really that I find is for me, maybe not so much of an attracting factor is the fact that that the circuits are so small, they're so tight, they're so compact. If they could get that to the point where you could race electric cars on a big full-size Grand Prix circuit like we saw in Bahrain today, or in Shanghai, or at Spa-Francorchamps, at Monza, at Montreal, wherever it is, I think that's where, you know, ultimately Formula One has to try and get to. Because, I mean, you hear now that a lot of the car manufacturers are looking at certain days that or certain dates in time in the future that beyond 2025 we are not manufacturing any more gasoline powered cars. We're not going to be making cars with internal combustion engines, whatever it might be. So that's obviously where it is. And I think if you look at this electric technology, I mean, a big step for Formula E is to be able to run a race with one car on one charge rather than in some of the previous seasons where, you know, they'd have to change switch midway cars into a different car. So the technology obviously is evolving very, very quickly. And Formula One has embraced that technology to a degree because we've been racing now for 5 years with the hybrid or turbo hybrid V6 engine. So there is the component of that. And, you know, there's the batteries in the car. So there's that kinetic recovery system. So I would like to see Formula One go in that direction in the future with some of these wild and really cool looking concept cars, and then be able to get that develop an electric engine that has the torque, it's got the power, it's got the top end that can power a car over 200 miles an hour, and, you know, can take it. I mean, you just look now at the Shanghai International Circuit, for example. It's about 5.5 kilometers in length. It's just over 300 kilometer total race distance, 56 laps, and a lap around there is about a minute and a half. Michael Schumacher's lap record was set back in 2004, and that's a 132.238. And if they could get electric cars at that point to be able to lap and perform in a same way, I think it'd be great, you know, but that's a long way away. And the other thing is too, and maybe I'm just being a little bit picky, I was really taken aback in 2014 when the cars got to Australia, they came out onto the track, and I was like, wow, these turbo hybrid cars are very quiet. But you compare those to the high-pitched whine of the electric cars, and I still maintain that the current Formula One cars, no matter how awesome and amazing that the technology is that go into these engines is, it still lacks something in the noise of the V10s, the V8s, the V12s. So, you know, there's that. I mean, call me a purist, call me picky, call me whatever you want, but I like the sound. I miss the sound of those engines.
No, I agree. And I think there's going to be more technologies and more things developing in the next 50 years that will change Formula One. Well, heck, society will change as a whole. So over the next 50-60 years, depending on how many races there is per year, so in the next 1,000 races, it could take less than 50 years if there's 21 per year. It's going to take exactly about 42. So for me, in the next 1,000 races, Mark, we might see the switch from gasoline engine to electric. And then we might even see a switch from electric to another type of powered car. I wouldn't be surprised if at that point, in 20 to 30 years down the road, there's something different. There's something even more powerful, and maybe you get cars going all the way to 400 kilometers an hour, or if not faster, with different type of tracks, because the only real racing you'll see in the entire world will be this, because cars will be either electric or autonomous, or no one will be driving maybe in 40 years. So F1 might be the only place where you can watch people drive very fast and compete against each other. Who knows? Maybe hydrogen-powered cars will be something in the future, because we all know hydrogen-powered spaceships exist, and from spaceship to Formula One, it's a very small gap, actually. Like, cars of Formula One are almost more similar to a spaceship than they would be to a regular road car. Like, in the evolution of it, they're closer to the higher end than the regular car. So I wouldn't be surprised if down the road, when gasoline is not an option anymore, you find another way to have a fuel-based car, just a different type of fuel. Hydrogen burns at extremely high temperature, and you can create a really different type of car. And maybe that's going to be the future of Formula One. I think we have to be open to it. But I think to make sure that it stays what it is, being full electric, I don't think will give Formula One its soul. Because the soul of Formula One is to be the cutting edge of technology for cars. And it's like NASA in a way, that it's when you push yourself and you try to attain almost impossible result, like going to the moon and landing on it in a time where you barely have black and white, like color television. That's a heck of an idea, an ambition. And if you pull it off, well, it drives technology to really different places. And I think Formula One can be that. If you push cars to be hydrogen fuel and create ways and different opportunities, maybe we will have down the road more than one option of eco-friendly type of cars. So electric, and maybe you'll have fuel for the persons who, and like hydrogen fuel cars, it's basically you break down water and you have some fuel. So I think we have to keep an open mind for the future. But in my mind, it has endured 50 years and will probably endure at least another 50.
Oh, absolutely. And how about this, Kevin? How about resurrecting George Clooney and his co-cast in that movie and rename it Men Who Stare at F1 Cars? I'm just going to put it out there. Yeah. We got, instead of these top-end Formula One drivers, we'll get a bunch of flaky psychics. But somehow, I think it would miss something. And of course, I'm kidding. Anyways, I think it's a good place to wrap up the show there, Kevin. Before we go, let's just quickly run down the World Championship. Valtteri Bottas, by virtue of winning the point for the fastest lap in Australia 2 weeks ago, leads the World Championship with 44 points, a single point ahead of his teammate Lewis Hamilton. Max Verstappen currently third with 27 points, a single point ahead of the new darling of Formula One, Charles Leclerc, who has 26. Sebastian Vettel rounds out the top five with 22. Kimi Raikkonen, Lando Norris, Kevin Magnussen, Nico Hulkenberg, and Pierre Gasly round out the top 10. Gasly with 4 points. And if you go all the way down to the very last couple of drivers in the World Championship, you have Antonio Giovinazzi, George Russell, Robert Kubica, Daniel Ricciardo, and Carlos Sainz, two guys that you would not expect to have 0 points two races into the Formula One season, have exactly that. So that's where we stand. We are done here, Kevin, and I'd like to thank everyone for listening to us here at Scuderia F1 on the Overtime Media Network. And you can find us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod, and you can give us a follow there and send us a tweet and weigh in on what we've discussed today in the show or on the regular show that comes out every week. And on behalf of myself and my co-host Kevin Laramie, thank you very much. And until next time, have a great Formula One.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.